Welcome back to Classics at Josie's Cafe. I am your host, Jose, and today, in anticipation to Dr. Sleep, the movie coming out starring Ewan McGregor, we are going to talk about The Shining. We're going to talk about House on Haunted Hill. And you might think, well, why are we talking about two different things? Well, Dr. Sleep, obviously we knew it was coming out, but when we found out who was directing it, I got incredibly excited. It's Mike Flanagan, who's responsible for the show The Haunting of Hill House, which is based on the original The Haunting. And I feel he did such an amazing job. As at the same time, there's a lot of similarities between The Haunting of Hill House and The Shining. And I'm joined with my good friend Tommy. I've been buds with him for a really long time. And we start to analyze and kind of compare both of these movies and works in general. Mike Flanagan is no stranger to adapting Stephen King. He did Gerald's Game, and he did a fantastic job with that movie, which obviously even excites me even more. So Mike Flanagan is the right guy for this job, definitely. He not only is he going to adapt the book, and he's going to be loyal to keeping a lot of the lore, but he's also going to make it his own thing. And I trust in him that he's going to do something amazing with Dr. Sleep. So just a little bit of background. We pretty much talk about The Shining, the book, as well. So we're going to bounce around, man. We're going to dive into the mythos of these haunted movies, because we figured out they have a lot in common. And we talked about the differences between, a little bit of differences between Shining the book, Shining the movie. If you haven't read the book, we're going to kind of spoil some stuff there. We're going to talk about Stanley Kubrick's Shining, and also the movie The Haunting. Now, we do mention House on Haunted Hill, but we're meaning The Haunting, at least when I say it. And I did tell Tommy to watch House on Haunted Hill, which is a mistake of mine. So that's the Vincent Price movie. I love Vincent Price, but if you hear him talk about Vincent Price, it's my fault. I told him to watch the wrong movie. But anyways, we do jump around. So if you haven't seen any of these materials, like if you haven't seen The Haunting by Robert Wise, if you haven't seen The Shining by Stanley Kubrick, what are you doing? If you haven't seen The Haunting of Hill House, the show, well, this might be a little bit much. But if you've seen all those things, obviously this would be something really fun and entertaining to listen to, because we take the needle and thread and we kind of talk about the similarities between all these characters and how they relate to each other, and how this is actually a larger idea, a larger genre that's possible. Obviously, I don't want to give too much away because I just want to leave it up for the conversation. But anyways, I hope you enjoy it, and here it is. Hill House. And this is where everything, for me, I put two and two together. I was like, oh my gosh, I love Haunting Hill House.
Such a great show. I mean, just well done all throughout. From episode one to the last episode, was it 10, I think?
Yeah.
I mean, just amazing work.
Nonstop. And I kind of feel like this guy took the Hill House, the original movie, and made it into this awesome show and expanded on it.
Well, The Haunting of Hill House was originally a novel written by Shirley Jackson, and he transformed that into the show that we watch now on Netflix. And just like, again, just an amazing job. I'm looking forward to, again, like Dr. Sleep, because
what's he gonna do with that?
Exactly.
Yeah, because he clearly understands that world. And in the middle of me, and this is, everything kind of happened without me knowing, right? You know, I got done watching The Haunting of Hill House. And then when I learned that they're making a movie with Dr. Sleep, I knew in the back of my mind, I need to go reread The Shining. And so I was in the middle of reading The Shining or listening to it. And all of a sudden, I see out of nowhere this trailer with Ewan McGregor.
So good.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're doing this. I had forgotten about it. And then I was like, oh man, they're going to screw it up. Well, let's see who's doing it. Oh, it's Mike Flanagan. Oh my God. And then I realized, whoa, he really understands what horror is.
Because I remember the last time a Stephen King movie was out was Dark Tower.
Oh yeah.
Just bad.
It was pretty bad.
It was bad. So like seeing this, and then like seeing, for instance, like the blackboard in the movie trailer. If you like read or listen to the book, you see it was like a pivotal part of that whole movie, how Abra is able to communicate to Danny Torrance. So it's like, awesome, great. They're like putting all these little pieces in there that need to be in there to like, that connects the book and the movie. It's just gonna be, so looking forward to it.
Right. So, if you haven't read or seen any of this stuff, spoiler, whatever, because we're about to just dissect a lot of this and figure out, try to see what they're going to do with it, but also talk about some of our favorite parts and dissect these movies. I particularly really liked A House on Haunted Hill, the original. So when I was watching the original, this was like my first thought was initially is either this woman's insane or the mansion is really trying to devour her.
That's a very good point, because I mean, when you watch the movie, you see like Dr. Trent is kind of behind it because he's with his wife, and but I mean, if you look at it, that I mean, the house is definitely plays a big point in it, because you see like the blood marked that lady, and it followed her into her bedroom. So I mean, I feel like it's both, just like what what's that guy's name, Pritchett, was talking about. So a little bit of both, if you ask me.
And you just saw the movie, right? What did you think about the movie?
So I saw it, and I remember watching the remake when I was a kid, and I was like, this is god-awful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you told me about it, and I wanted to watch it, because I saw Vincent Price in it. I was like, oh, man, great. So I watched it, and I thought it was actually really pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, I had like levels that was just, even to me now watching it, even though it was done in 1959, just there was some eeriness about it, like when they were checking out the hollow areas in the walls down in the basement where the wine cellar was at. And you also just see like the caretaker who just came out of nowhere and just kind of like floated by. And it makes me think, is like, is that really a caretaker? Like he said, is it a caretaker to the house, or is it just like an actual ghost that you see and that people aren't just really connecting yet?
Yeah. We definitely did a podcast about this. So if you guys are interested, we have an in-depth analysis about this movie, so you guys should check it out. So I'm not really going to get deep into that movie, but the only reason I asked you to watch is just to kind of, so we can dive into a lot of the similarities between the show and the movie. Like, for instance, I don't think there's a mistake or a coincidence. Actually, it's not a coincidence that there's a character named Theo in the movie, and there's a character named Theo in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's one thing. And also, there's a lot of like callbacks to that movie as well. So it's like, not that he just took that idea, but he kept a lot of the reoccurring things. The house itself, to me, it seems like they went to great lengths to make you feel like it's the same house. And that's something that to me was very important, because it's kind of telling you like this, we're retelling this story, and this is just happens to be a family that moves in and goes through
restoring it.
Restoring it, sure. Yeah. And that's another thing that was really interesting, right?
And it wasn't just like, hey, contestants. You know, you get submitted a whole night, you get $10,000. No, they're trying to, like, make a living.
Right, exactly. And see, that's to my next point. A lot of these have the same kind of threads where they're kind of, in the show, they're obsessed with fixing this house to get that quick payoff, to flip it. And they kind of lose vision of what family really is. It's really a disintegration in regards to their family that's starting to happen. And you see that in many different ways. Whereas in The Shining, you read the book, that's basically what's going on as well. It's Jack finally gets, he thinks this is like a new lease of life. He knows he has a temper. He has a drinking problem. He's trying to keep it together. And is his family also going towards a disintegration? And he loses himself, especially when he's rummaging through all those
newspaper clippings about the history of it. I mean, he's there to, like you said, start again. You know, he wants to build a life for his family. And he knows there's a place where he can write his book, his new book about the hotel. And then, like I said, he kind of just loses himself in the hotel. You know, he just kind of gets invested into it, and it eventually takes him over, and he forgets about family. It's like you said about, you know, the other connection.
Right, right. I feel like those are not coincidences. I think those are things that both are speaking in regards to the same kind of things. There's a scene in the show where Theo's talking about when she was a kid, and her mom was obsessed with this glass house that she had done for a client, and she had spent all this time, and Theo just wanted attention, and Theo came out and threw a rock at it and just ruined it. And then she got smacked by her mom, and she said, that day I learned something about her and she learned something about me too. And to me, that really resonated. It was like, wow, like, she understood that her mom is all about her work. And to her, that she set priorities over her work, over her family. And Theo, also, she showed that Theo's not going to take it, you know. And you take that almost obsessive nature. And also, you know, when she was drawing the diagrams later on, the mother drawing Jagger,
the
she's
blueprints
like going
of the dream house of the and dream everything house, and then yeah. It kind of coincided with actual blueprints,
right,
of Hill House.
Yeah. And they're like, what, kind of gone crazy. It kind of mirrors what Jack Torrance is going through.
Oh, absolutely. It's insane. It's like, again, how it also brought in points of the old movie, how you don't know if she's going crazy from the house or somebody else, and same thing with that. And then same game with Jack Torrance, you know, is it the hotel, you know, that's just messing with them, or is it these ghosts? We don't know, and it's just slowly getting at them.
And that goes same with the thread of the woman in the house on Hill.
Exactly.
You don't know if it's her, you know, if everything's in her head that she's going insane, or if it's in fact this house. So, you know, you start seeing like this pattern. Now, the one thing I do have to say is that I'm sure that King subconsciously took that upon himself to write that movie. I don't think he was saying, oh, I'm going to write My Haunted House. I think it was just, he just happened to just start writing it. And we all know the story
about
the
how
Stanley.
Yeah, he stayed in the hotel, the Stanley Hotel, and then room 217, and just kind of like
started writing it.
Yeah.
But what I started thinking, so when I first watched The Shining, I didn't think anything of it. I watched The Shining first.
Who didn't? I mean, come on.
Right, right. It's such a epic movie. But when I watched The Haunting, not The Haunting, sorry, The Hill House and Haunted Hill, the shots that they shot, the way they shoot the house, the shots on the outside, kind of telling you, like, hey, this thing's alive. That's kind of like the idea, right? Stanley Kubrick was doing that as well with the hotel. He had those scenes, so I think it was like my eighth viewing of The Shining. After I had seen Hill House, I was like, oh, I see what he's doing. He's paying homage to this. And then it got me thinking, oh, wow, he's doing it because he's probably like a movie fan or whatever. But in the middle of me reading The Shining, Stephen King mentions Hill House. He compares Hill House to the Overlook Hotel.
But the difference is that the Overlook Hotel is so much more, such a bigger monster, I guess you could say. It's not a house.
It's a hotel.
It's a hotel. And then it blew my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, Stephen King's a genius. Because I imagine he probably thought, oh, a house. Okay, that's going to be haunted. But what about a hotel? What about the energy this hotel could have? And even if it's this dark, mysterious energy, imagine how much the potency of that.
Absolutely. I mean, just like the history of it in the book, you see that there's like mob hits in there and just like weird parties and like that weird, what was it, like a New Year's party with the guy who's obsessed with dogs, you know, and just great creepiness and just tons and tons of that energy staying within the house, you know, and that is attached to something.
That shows his genius, man. The history, because he talks about the history of the mansion itself, and I love the book. I love the history. I love the newspaper clippings. Like, I loved how he got into deep in the history of it. And that there's another thing going on there, because you could make the case that, because this hotel's always being compared to high society, and how just because there's these people that are a large stature or whatever doesn't mean that they're saints, you know. In fact, he's giving all this garbage away, and the people who own the hotel are trying to protect it. They're like, we don't want this to be like a snuff film or something, like a snuff book about the Overlook. And I guess part of Jack is like, he's embittered.
Oh yeah, he's bitter towards like the management and everything else, because they view him as just a troublemaker, and this is like his last resort, and he decides to write that book about the hotel to like to slander
show the
it,
garbage,
you know?
Yeah,
just to show him all the dirty secrets, you know, skeletons in the closet, you know, everything, just to get back at him.
Yeah, which tells me that there's another side to this, like how you could argue like how America was built as a whole, and all the sins of maybe not even just America, but any sort of big country, and how we nationalize the country, and how we rewrite the history. But we forget where we came from and the things we had to do to get there.
We like to, like you said, we like to rewrite history to suit ourselves.
Right.
We're like, hey, we're not that bad. We did this, and now we're this great country. But we, like you said, we tend to forget the little things that we did that are just so bad that it is how our country is now.
Yeah.
It defines us.
Exactly. And it's like, those are the horrors, those are skeletons in the closet, so to speak. And he's really kind of reminding you, and I feel like that's really a big horror thing. To really think about, oh wow, all these things that happen here, like it's, you know, the Indian burial grounds, and it's all connecting now, you know, and like these people are parading themselves and having lavish dinners on what costs, kind of thing, you know. It's very interesting, and I kind of feel like Stanley Kubrick. A lot of people, there are a lot of big differences between the book and the movie. But now I kind of see why he had all those Indian artifacts, and you know, when it comes to like certain rooms and the carpeting and things like that. Because obviously he's not doing it with words, but he wanted to make you kind of feel that at the same time, if that makes sense, with the imagery.
He wanted you to make that connection. He just wanted to like give it away. You gotta really think about it.
Right.
And it just made you, when he really thought about it, like you said, just like made that connection. And you're just like, oh my God, this is just so much better than I thought it was, you know?
Yeah.
This is really creepy, really good. I mean, it connects to the book a lot. It kind of explains a little bit about the hotel itself, you know?
Yeah.
About how is it so haunted.
Yeah.
I mean, Stephen King's great at doing that. You know, he's done that in a lot of his other books, connecting them. I mean, he even has books that connect within each other, you know, of other books.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. I don't know how you would have been able to show the rich history of the hotel the way that King did. And also, King did a really great job of showing you who Jack really was and his battles. I don't know how you really would be able to do that. I think Stanley Kubrick took a lot of The Shining, right? And I think he did a great movie. But I kind of feel like it was hard for him to really make us feel like this was a family, like a real family, like Stephen King did, you know?
And at the beginning of the movie, I remember they're in the bug driving up to the hotel, and they look like a, it's like a little happy family. And I think Stanley Kubrick did a great job picking Jack Nicholson to make Jack Torrance.
Yeah.
I mean, great job. And then once they see, when you get there, you don't really see him as a family. You just see like a mother and a son.
Right.
And just some guy who's taking care of the hotel.
Right. And Danny's also, he doesn't really speak, but in the book, he's really smart.
Oh, absolutely.
He's ahead of his class, and he's very articulate. And in the movie, you don't see that either. So, I mean, they're just little things.
I just got to say, I remember one part of the book that I really wish was in the movie, because it was just, it just really talked about how that hotel is just so possessed, because when Danny's outside, he sees that the hedge animals come to life.
Yeah, the lions, the lizard also, Jack sees. Yeah. The only thing I can think about was, you know, as far as movies go, I kind of feel like it was a budget thing.
Yeah, I get it too. And then, like, again, the book is so long, you only have so much of the movie you can do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have to get the kind of important parts. But I just think that scene would have just...
It would have really resonated.
Yeah.
It would have really made more sense because you were... Because, you know, going back to The Haunting, in the original, you have the wall caving in.
Mm-hmm.
You have the dog sounds. You have a lot of the weird creaks and whatnot. And really, Kubrick, what he did is he just did a lot of made you feel disoriented. Like, made you feel like you're disoriented. What's the word?
Disoriented?
Gotcha, man. Yeah, yeah. Thanks. And I understand that. But I don't think, I think the vision part would be cool. I mean, you know, the room 237, obviously, he has that epic
scene. I mean,
he had
that scene with the woman in the tub, and just like the music and the slow pace of it. And like, you can see Jack Torrance just like mesmerized by this gorgeous lady in the bathtub just waving him over.
It's different. It's different. I get it. I mean, I think they're two different things. Obviously, the way that I feel about it is that if you really want to know what The Shining really is, you have to read the book.
Absolutely.
The movie, I can appreciate it. It's a masterpiece on its own right. But the book is so rich with history and what it's trying to say, you know, the battle with any sort of addiction.
Oh, yeah.
That's, to me, is definitely number one. You know, he's looking at a guy who's ruining his life because of his temper and his drinking. And now we know it's because he does have the shine, and you could argue that he's masking it.
I mean, it might be because in Dr. Sleep, he becomes an alcoholic because of the horrors of the hotel, the Overlook Hotel, and then just, like I said, just masking it because, you know, he believed in the book that he'd rather deal with the hangover than with The Shining and hearing people think and everything else.
And if
you
think about it, I mean, if I'm seeing a dead woman
constantly,
yeah. Like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's just like, that, I mean, really makes you think of, really makes you sympathize with him.
Absolutely.
And everything that he went through.
And then, like, that one part of Dr. Sleep where he thinks of Deanie and the little boy.
Or past horrors, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing, Skeletons in the Closet. Again, mm-hmm. This is a more personal way to show Skeletons in the Closet, but now he has to live with that. And how do you live with that without having to mask it?
Yep, exactly. And then, you know, he figures out a way.
Yeah.
With, you know, he does AA because he becomes an alcoholic just like his dad.
Just like his daddy.
You know, I mean, what was that good line Jack Torrance has? You get, come here and take your medicine. Even, like, says that in Dr. Sleep, Danny. Thinking about his dad.
Yeah, and that's another cool thing is that Dr. Sleep is its own thing. And I like that. It's not like what they did with Star Wars, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you still have the main character, Danny Torrance, but then you find somebody who has The Shining, and like one, how he talked about The Shining to John and was it named Billy, I think his name was?
Yeah, Billy, you know.
Yeah, and he's like saying, you know, compared to me, and her shining, like, I'm the fortune teller at a county fair.
I like that, too.
You know, it's like, oh, man, this girl is just amazing at The Shining. And,
yeah.
And again, like, it's how he helps with his horrors in the past is by paying it, protecting this little girl.
And he got the perfect Obi-Wan to do it.
Right? I mean, he's got to go to Dick Halloran to get some advice. But.
Yeah, and that's another key difference is Halloran didn't die in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he didn't die in the book, but in the movie, he died.
Yeah, and so it's interesting. Like, I wonder what they're going to do with this new movie because they're trying to bridge both the book and the movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm worried about that part, too, because, like you said, he died in the movie. He got axed to the back. Even though in the book, it was just a rope mallet, and he got hit and lost his teeth. You know, hit in the face, lost some of his teeth and everything, yeah. Hurt his back. And but he died still in the book, but it was like
way years after. Later. He was able to mentor mm-hmm. Danny.
Yeah, and then what was so cool is, I mean, they can still do it, obviously, but the tie-in, how like he's able to talk to him because through a dying patient. You know, and
yeah.
Went through, used her as like a conduit.
Yes, that was really cool, I thought.
I thought it was amazing. I was like, oh my goodness, that's awesome. The
whole body swap thing.
Yeah, and then you're like, you could see how in the book he was describing how like just time stopped and he didn't realize until he just looked at his watch because he didn't hear anything. There's no tick and it just stopped.
Yeah.
And then he could just hear like, he could just feel like the shining of Dick. And he was like asking that personal question like, hey, if you are Dick, what was the name, something only he and I would know? And then he talked about how, you remember that lady talking about, I want to get in his pants later. And I was like, it's pretty good. Something only those two would know. Like, what does that mean?
So I wonder if that's what they're going to do. You know, like, they're going to keep the idea that he died and then he
I
can
feel
just.
Like they have to.
He just channels him. It's another Jedi mind trick.
I mean,
I guess.
It's a big part of the book to get him to figure out what to do. How do I teach this girl? You know, and like, who are these people
that,
are trying to hunt after her?
Right, yeah, exactly. The true knot.
The true knot. The queen bitch.
Yeah. And that's another cool, too, is like, they're clearly different types of vampires. And that's pretty exciting to me. I wonder what they're going to do with that, you know?
I mean, they're vampires, but they're like quasi-immortal. They're not really immortal because they have to like take
feed
the steam, you know? And that's how they de-age once they get that steam and but they can die still.
Yeah.
Because, like, I like how he did it again against the traditional vampires. Like, it even dresses in the book when she's talking about Twilight. Right. And she's like, no, this is not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they can be out in the sun. They don't need a stake to the heart to kill them.
Right.
You know, and, like, you can see how the Grandpa Flick, dies from measles.
Measles, yeah.
It's like, it's a normal, with a rube thing to die.
I also like the idea that they're just, like, trailer park.
Yeah, the RV park people who just travel around from place to place to look, just to fly under the radar.
Which would make so much sense. They have a bunch of cash and just...
Yeah, just rich people who live forever.
Yeah. No, it's really good. Now, clearly this is definitely a book where he's kind of looking back at him... You know, going through addiction and overcoming addiction, because that's just really what Danny ends up doing. He's going through that.
And he has to be able to confront his past horrors to move forward.
Yeah, and I like the whole idea of him growing through that, because we see him at his worst, and we see him kind of go through the process of that. So, you know, as a whole, like. All these things, to me, the horrors that everyone's kind of going through, it's a lot having to do with addiction in general, because if you watch The Haunting of Hill House, it's a different type of addiction. You know, the twins, they're going through, I think he's into heroin, I think that's what it is. And
yeah, he's like into the heroin hardcore drugs.
Yeah, the hardcore drugs, and that's what he uses to mask, because he keeps seeing this big, tall guy.
The boiler hat guy.
Yeah.
And, like, they have that twin connection, and, you know, it's kind of like The Shining a little bit.
Now it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like The Shining, too. Exactly. Yeah. That one uses a lot of these same type of game. We call it, like, a little game that they do, right? Let's say mythos, you know, where it's, like, they're haunted by these things, and there's these weird... You could argue they have powers. Theo, when she takes off the gloves.
Little psychic powers kind of thing.
Yeah, she can see things.
That's again, you know, a little bit like The Shining.
A little bit like The Shining.
You know, Abra, how she can do her little stuff.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit like The Shining.
And then I remember one part in the Haunting of Hill House, how the brother is talking about ghosts and how he thinks that it's like how we, the only ghosts that we have are like things that haunt us and past memories and stuff like that. I mean, it's kind of playing back towards the original movie. Like, is it the house, or is it just people messing with her?
Exactly. And all these things, they're rooted in the family dynamic. You know, the house is just a representation of family. You know, not, I mean, it's a giant metaphor for what a home is. And I remember plenty of times in the show, they were like, the house is a house. It's just wood. It's just, that's a house. But that's basically telling you that's not a home. A home, it's a family.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so another thing, another kind of thread between these works, in The Haunting, they have that one red door that they're trying to get into. In the Overlook Hotel, I would argue it's 237 or
217 if you read the book, but 237 if you read if you watch the movie. But yeah, again, like, that's like the heart of the hotel, because that's like the worst thing that's ever happened. Like the one lady who just wants Danny, and that's just part of the hotel. You know, the hotel wants him. And the same thing, like in the show, they want to get in that red door, and they find out it's like the heart of the house. You know, that's where they want to keep and feed off of them. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. A nod, that a really cool nod that they did between the show and the movie of The Haunting Hill House is a staircase.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because in the movie they just talk about, oh, there was a woman that hung herself, but in the show you see this girl go all the way to the top, and I was like, I know what this is happening.
Yep.
And just when she hangs herself, and then it goes through all those moments. Oh, was my, like, God,
you find out she's haunting herself.
That was the craziest thing.
I was like, holy cow. She sees a bit neck lady, and it's actually her. I mean, it's just saying, it goes back to, like you said, in the movie, how...
I got chills, same thing, like, man. Doom.
It's like, holy crap.
I got chills. That was a moment where I was like, this is not just a show, dude. This is something else.
I applauded him. I was like, oh my God, that was so good. I did not think about that. And usually, like, I mean, movies, I can... something so easy, I can predict what's going to happen. But with that, I did not see it coming.
Yeah.
It was just insane. I loved it.
And another thing is, there's only one jump scare in the whole episodes, the whole series.
Yeah, because, I mean, you claim if you watch it, you see ghosts, because they're, like, throughout the show.
They're always hidden.
Yeah, but there's only, like, they said that one jump scare. I'm trying to remember what it was.
They're in the car, and they're talking about...
Oh, yeah, and Nellie just, like, pops out. It's like, oh.
But it kind of feels like it wasn't like, oh, we'll just do a jump scare. No, it's like it needed it.
Yeah.
It's really part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really drove it and really made it work.
But absolutely.
If you go back to that show and watch it all over again, there's odd things everywhere. I did figure out the clock, dude, the guy fixing the clock. I saw it, and I was like, okay, that must be a ghost.
And then I didn't even connect that. I was just like, it's just a guy.
But that was the only one. That's the only one. The only thing that gave it away was the mustache. And I was like, no, that has to be it. Cause, I mean,
think about the way he was dressed too. Think about it now, it's like, it looked like he was from the 40s. No.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the thing. You could, because a lot of people have a handlebar mustaches now, I guess, and you could say, oh, really? But
thanks a lot, hipsters, by the way.
Exactly. But see now. But see, with that, kind of tells me there's that attention to detail with Mike Flanagan. He's like, no, if there's something there that's peculiar, it's like there's a reason for it. And that's the only reason why I started trusting him. Like, oh, wow, okay, that means something. And then he had to be reminded, like, hey, we never got a guy to work on the clock.
Yeah, he wouldn't like detail about a clock like that. You can tell because there's like little tell signs when no one opens the clock and fixes on it, but...
You have to take it to a place.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you want somebody to come up there. It costs way too much money.
Yeah.
And the clock was fine, so there was no need to it. And like I said, there never was a guy. He actually saw a ghost. He didn't believe in it.
Yeah.
But
So, you know, throughout the series, I'm sure there was plenty of ghosts, almost off, like, you know, shadows and weird, peculiar things that you could probably pick out that you didn't notice before. That would be fun to, like, kind of check out.
Right, but just, like, spend all day, like, oh, there's one. Oh, there's another one.
Now, the little boy at the end that dies, that was insane. The baby.
Oh, yeah.
That was insane. Because at first I was like, that's not real. Like, he's not real. But he turned out to be, like, you know, a real boy.
It was a little girl.
It was a little girl.
It was Luke's. They thought it was Luke's imaginary friend. Because you learn later she wasn't allowed on the property at all. Because the two parents, the caretakers, just like in the other original, there's two caretakers.
Yep.
They didn't want her coming in because they knew something was wrong with that house.
Yep.
And then the only time they didn't keep an eye on her, went in there and the mom poisoned them. Try to kill them all to wake them up.
To wake them up. Oh my gosh. So mm-hmm. good.
Yep.
Oh.
So I was like, oh man, she was real.
Okay, how about then. That performance though, man?
Right?
She was great.
She was great.
She was great. Just, oh.
Again, you don't know if she was going insane from the hauntings or was it just the house? Or was it just her messing with herself? Don't know.
And we don't know till the end.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know till the end until the father sacrifices himself. I mean, the acting is amazing. The writing was amazing. The special effects was just amazing. Like, I was, like, really scared, like, sometimes. Like, they all being pulled by the house.
Oh, man, I remember watching at night. Some parts were just straight eerie.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that first episode or something like that where he remembers his dad like going to his room and like, all right, come with me, keep your eyes closed, I'm gonna have him close your ears, keep your eyes. I'm like, we're watching the scene, I'm like, someone gonna jump out, oh, I hear a thump, where is it, you know? I'm like, oh, what's going on?
And the way that they cut it, like, they would show you a little bit more of that sequence
exactly
as they tell the story.
It's a good hook. I want you to watch more and more to see everything play out.
Yeah, exactly. Man, it's so well done.
See, I'm hoping it's like that in the movie, how he does it. It's like a good hook to just like keep you focused the whole time.
Wow.
You know?
And that's what I'm interested too. Dr. Sleep, I wouldn't know where to even begin because
I don't know either. It's hard. It's tough.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're going to get him probably like at his worst when he's drunk trying to battle the addiction.
There's like there's a preface of him, you know, like growing up, talking about the, I mean, they have to have a lockbox. You know what I'm saying? Maybe like, I don't know, maybe he's like in the bus
mm-hmm.
and he's dreaming and he remembers that or something like that, you know? And then when he wakes up, he's on the bus headed towards like New Hampshire.
Yeah.
You know, because that would be a pretty cool way to do it. I don't know. Because I remember like talking about, for instance, Avengers Endgame, and then seeing the scene where they already have the Power Stone. I'm like, oh man, talking about how they got it. I was hoping they have like they go to Nova Prime first to get the stone, but I'm just hoping they like have something interesting to show him with the Shining, with the locks box to help him able to clear his mind from the past of the Overlook Hotel to him being just this drunk.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that there clearly has to be a process.
Absolutely.
Obviously. It's just the thing about that I'm wondering, really curious about, is how they're going to portray the true knot.
Yes. I remember seeing the previews, and I was like, oh, there's Rosie the Hat. You know, Rose the Hat, and there's Snake Bite Andy. You know, I'm like, I really hope they do a good job. Because I remember, like, in the book, they talk about how they get the steam.
Yeah, that's just
brutal.
That's oof. Definitely brutal. There's a lot of questions, but obviously I have faith in him. We have to wait till November.
Ugh. Do we even have a running time yet?
No. Ugh. I don't think so.
I'm hoping it's like The Shining where it's like 2 hours long, you know? Maybe if they go 2.5, I'd be okay. I'd be that one guy in the theater. I'm like, yes, I don't care.
Right.
I'm
watching it. I trust in him because I think that what he did with Haunting was just phenomenal. It's like a masterpiece. I feel like that show alone is just like just a beautiful gem. So if you compare that to even the original movie, I really love, this is the first time, like, I love this show more than the movie, I do.
Yeah, it's tough, because usually, like, the movies are always better.
Yeah.
But, like, the show, I mean, it's a different concept, but, I mean, it's different, like, idea of the same concept, but I really enjoyed the show a lot more. That's the thing about shows, too, because their episodes are, like, almost an hour long, so you can get a lot more detail. But,
and,
I mean...
Exactly. And I kind of feel like it's very nice and concise. He expanded on a lot of things, but it was just, we told a story about the family, which was important, but he kept a lot of the mythos in regards to the haunting. It was kind of like, it was as if, I don't know how he did this, but it was as if he sat down, he wrote rules. This house does this, this, and this, and we can't deviate from this, and then wrote under this sort of sandbox.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean... Because it followed those rules the whole time. I mean, like, the house can only do so much.
Right.
But, I mean, it did enough to latch on to the mom and to...
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, hear the rest of the kids and then the dad just kind of feel like there's something different about this house than the rest because, you know, how the dad cut his hand open on the fan... Because the son, you know, he turned off the electricity and everything, but all of a sudden, you know, band turned on and got his hand.
Right.
And then, like...
That was cool.
Yeah, and then, like, other parts of it, like, you know, like, the house is different to every person. And
yes,
like,
the room is specifically.
Yeah, the room specifically, like, it's the treehouse, it's his game room, it's, like, a team room or something like that. You know, it's different for every single person.
Right.
And then, you know, like... House can only do so much, just mess with your head. It really can't come alive and, you know, reach out. But, I mean, still really done very well. It's like the Overlook Hotel. I mean, the ghosts are...
The ghosts, yeah. Everything that's ever... The history of it, I guess. The energy, the whatever you may call it. It's definitely living and persisting there, which is mirroring what kind of Dr. Sleep expanded on. And that's what another thing I like is how it expanded on, we touched on the powers a little bit, but it really expanded on the evil that was in the Overlook Hotel, which kind of really explained, this was a cool part, they explained that, you know, Jack thought it was him who the mansion wanted, but it was really the boy.
He was like, he was just the conduit, you know. Yeah. He was just like the tool for the house to use to get to Danny, because it's his dad, and he knows how much he loves his dad. He wants to make sure his dad is happy and everything else, and the hotel's able to use that to get to him. And I mean, again, when Danny's able to make that connection, like, this is not you, Dad, this is the hotel, and the hotel in the book, I wish they'd done the movie because it'd been insane, smashes his own face into, like, can't even tell Jack Torrance anymore. It's a hotel. The hotel has him for sure now.
Yeah.
And then he was able to, at the last second, to let go of Danny and take control of himself so, like, he can run away, and then the boiler just blows up.
And that's another thing that I was kind of disappointed, too. It was, I always felt when I watched The Shining there that they have a boiler scene in The Shining, like the Kubrick version. But
it's just, like, a very split in the very beginning of the movie.
But it never comes back. Yeah. And, you know, as a movie... I don't know if it was something that got caught out in the last minute, but I always felt like, oh, something's going to happen with the boiler. Nothing, you know what happens. I mean? Nothing ends up happening. But in the book, it does.
Absolutely.
The book is a big, vital thing, and it blows
you have
up.
To, you have to reset it ever so often, or it's just going to overflow, whatever, and it's just going
to... Which, to me, is a cool metaphor for, like, quote-unquote, boiling point. Like, you know, he's going crazy, and it's a metaphor for the whole life thing. Oh, well, now his thing blows up.
And then the freaking movie... goes out to the maze and freezes to death. I'm like, that's a crappy way for Jack to die.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's it?
That's it? And I'm like, really?
Yeah, you can't get a miniature and blow it up?
Right? And it's like, come on. Dick Halloran, Danny and his mom, Wendy's supposed to come out alive. And what is this shit?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm glad that you still have the book The Shining. Again, it's interesting what they're going to do with Dr. Sleep in regards to that, because obviously there's not going to be a boiler malfunction, but he is going to have to return to the Overlook. There are, you know, that scene of him looking through that chopped up door.
The door, and seeing Red Rum.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too. I don't think Red Rum's in the book.
Actually, I think there's just one little piece because he's like dreaming a little bit, and
oh yeah, he does see the old woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and then the lockbox part, and then he's able to see Deanie, and then she warns him about the true knot, you know, like stay away from the top pad, you know, she'll eat you alive and everything. And I remember a little, like I remember hearing it. There's like a little, just a little part where he sees Red Rum. Mm. And then I saw, it's like only one time. And then
yeah.
I think he's like remembering back about the hotel.
Yeah, I do remember that now. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's clearly going to be pulled back to the hotel, which is cool. Which is, that's kind of like in all these books, they're always being pulled back to the hotel. I mean, not the books, but you know, in the show, everybody gets pulled back to the hotel. Jack gets pulled back. The last thing I'm kind of going to mention, which now it kind of makes sense, but back then there's a scene. So when you watch the original movie, the Haunting movie, Hill House, or
mm-hmm.
when they're driving towards the house, there's a crushed car on the way there.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And it's a bit kind of foreshadowing because that's what ends up, how she ends up dying in a car wreck. In The Shining, when they're driving their buggy up there, there's a crushed buggy there. Ooh. Too. So that kind of tells me, oh, okay, I see. Like, I kind of felt like that was intentional. Like, oh, this is, he's another homage, maybe?
Maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe it's Danny, like, using The Shining because Tony is able to see little parts of the future or something. And
maybe.
Maybe it's like a foreshadowing, like, hey,
a destructive,
you do not need to go there because,
yeah,
know,
this is a warning, like, mm-hmm. we shouldn't go
turn
there.
Turn around, come back, but again, you know, he wants to please his dad, so.
Exactly, yeah. And so now when you watch The Shining, it makes sense why all these people are holding the red drink. Because now, you know, red rum, it's the alcohol, just happens to be murder backwards, you know what I mean? Like, yep. It's a poison drink that's ruining your life. I never thought of that before, but
I didn't think about it till just right now. It's a good point. I mean, it almost ruined Danny's life. He's a grown man, but I remember he mentioned it. If his dad maybe had AA, it would have been different, but it helped him. He was like, what, 12 years sober now?
Yeah. I mean, overall, it's The Shining to me, the book is just a masterpiece on its own. Right now, it's my favorite Stephen King book.
It's definitely one of my top Stephen King books, too. Like, people talk about It because the movies and everything else, but I mean, The Stand, that's just a long-ass book, too. But The Shining is up there. It's so good. I mean, it's not as long as his other books, you know, because, you know, he goes into detail on some of his other long books, but I mean, it's good. You know, it hooks you at the very beginning because he talks about how Danny is so special than different people, but he didn't know what's called, and then he's able to become his own, get his own Jedi Master, you know, Dick Halloran, to help him tell him what it is and everything, and it's just so good. You know, it talks about each individual character, about who they are and their upbringing, and then puts it all together.
All together. Wraps it all up. Just like the show, The Haunting of Hill House wraps up everything
absolutely
so nicely and elegantly, and talks about the importance of having people in your life that matter and what true family is, being there for each other through the good and the bad, and I guess the real meaning of the real meaning of family, you know. So there you go. That's our little 2 cents on the mythos, I guess, of The Haunting of Hill House, The Shining, and Dr. Sleep. And anything else you need to add?
I think
we've covered a lot.
Covered a lot of details about it all. I'm just hoping that get people interested and wanting to see Dr. Sleep and
maybe
read the book of The
Shining. Oh, man, you got to read The Shining. If you enjoyed The Shining as a movie, and you just get on Audible or get on whatever audiobook or read it.
Bookstore, for God's sake.
Yeah, little half-price books, and get through it because it's so rich in history in regards to the Overlook Hotel, which makes me really want to go to the Stanley.
Oh, my God. Go to Colorado. Go to Estes Park.
And go to the Stanley Hotel. It's so cool. Like, it's a real place, you know?
I mean, you can stay the night there and do, like, a night tour of the hotel. I mean, that just sounds like a lot of fun right there.
They have a cool little hedge mage now.
Oh, my God. I would, like, I don't care. I just, like, here, take all my money.
Yeah, just exactly. Let me go. Let's just go.
Give me, like, a local camcorder or something. Just record my whole, you know, episode there so I can just see it later.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. Maybe we'll go one day.
Heck yeah.
Maybe we'll go one day. Anyways, that's it.
Thanks, guys.
And that's the show. I had such a blast doing this show. I had such a blast talking to Tommy. Hopefully Tommy and I can get together and do a lot of more episodes of our favorite movies and whatnot. Please comment, thumbs up. I do have previous episodes where you can check out The Shining and we talk about The Haunting. If they are not up on iTunes, it's only because I have to fix my hard drive. My hard drive had fallen back in December and I lost almost everything. So I was going to load it up on YouTube, but yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. It's cost me about $2,500 to fix it. So we'll see if we can work that out. But anyways, please let us know. Is there any sort of horror movies that might actually... I'm kind of curious. Are there any horror movies out there that might fall into this sort of genre? Obviously, there's a lot of them that you could make a case that it's a story of mental health, and it's a very interesting way to portray what someone goes through. And I feel like a lot of awesome psychological thrillers and horrors do a great way of making you think and making you question the world surrounding you. And I love that. It immediately makes me think of Philip K. Dick. But anyways, thank you so much for listening, and on to the next one.